News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Here we go. 6 minutes after 8 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5. You read his work at the Washington Examiner and also QuinnHillier.com. It is Quinn Hillier talking about Afghanistan, among other things. Good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys.
Quinn, so I guess yesterday was it, right? The final five U.S. military transport aircraft lifted out of Afghanistan and doing the exact opposite of what Biden said they would do in an interview last week. They did leave Americans on the ground that wanted to come back to America, at least or near 200 Americans, and thousands of desperate Afghans still stuck there in Afghanistan. I want to talk, I mean, there's so many different avenues we can take this, but let's just talk about the withdrawal yesterday where no Joe Biden live on camera. Instead, you get Secretary of State Anthony Blinken giving a press conference where he didn't take questions. I mean, overall, The way this looks, not good for the administration and certainly not good for those Americans that are stuck in Afghanistan now.
This is a disgrace. This is an absolute disgrace. The president has not only done just about everything wrong, but he's been a coward. He has other than one press conference, which was scary as heck, he has refused to take questions. He didn't have the guts yesterday to get up and do the announcement. He's apparently going to do another one of his boring speeches today where he reads off of a teleprompter and does that very badly. So just the way that he's handling it is not as a stand-up guy. What he has done has been a disgrace. You do not leave Americans that want to get out. You do not say, well, we have a deadline, which, by the way, Biden himself set, and say, sorry, tough luck, guys. We have a responsibility to Americans, to American citizens. They're there basically because we were there, and now they want to leave, and we're leaving them behind to the mercy of the most brutal regime known to man. This is unimaginable. The man should resign in disgrace.
Now, there was video yesterday, I think it was Laura Logan who tweeted audio from one of her sources in Afghanistan, where they said basically death squads were going door-to-door and assassinating, killing people that they said were traitors to the Taliban. And then I think the most the image that most signifies what's happened there is the Black Hawk helicopter circling over Kabul yesterday with a man hanging there from the helicopter. That just goes to show that the Taliban is still the Taliban, no matter what the Biden administration says.
This boggles the mind, and it didn't have to happen. Now, there is plenty of fault to go to Trump as well for setting an even earlier deadline when, frankly, we should not have withdrawn at all. But once you get to this administration, it is this administration's baby, and they've done everything wrong. You don't leave Bagram Air Force Base. You don't pull out your military before you pull out your civilians. You just don't do that. Now, let's play a thought experiment. This came from a reader who wrote me yesterday, and he's absolutely right. If we had not been there for 20 years, but Afghanistan was still as bad as Afghanistan is, if someone had said, okay, you can now come in and get Bagram Air Force Base in pristine condition as a forward deployment to help put pressure on and respond to any threats from Russia and China, and as a headquarters for a listening operation, an intelligence operation into the terrorist hotbed of the world, and in so doing, for less than 10,000 troops, and sometimes as few as 2,500, you can also help provide intelligence to an Afghan government to keep the Taliban at bay. If they had said, you can have that starting now, what would you do? The answer is, we would take that in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. We would say, oh, the cost of that is a pittance compared to the good that we get out of it. You mm-hmm. would have said, what a great opportunity to have a forward deployment and an intelligence listening post and to help keep them from striking the American homeland again, all of that. There is no way we would say no to that. And yet, we had all that, and we gave it up.
Hard to believe. Really.
Hard to believe.
So, Quinn, this story got my attention yesterday when the president of Afghanistan fled the country and the city began to collapse. The U.S. military leaders met with the Taliban, and the Taliban told the negotiators, basically, U.S., here's what we have, two options. You can take responsibility for securing Kabul, or you can allow us to do it. And the U.S. opted to allow the Taliban to secure the city. And they couldn't believe the answer. One of the Taliban spokesperson says, we couldn't control our emotions. We were so happy. Most of our fighters were crying. We never thought we would take Kabul so quickly. That's incredible. It was just offered to them. They offered us the opportunity, and we said, no, thank you.
I saw that story. I don't know that the administration has confirmed it. If it is true, it boggles the mind. And look, this then goes beyond Biden. It goes to his entire team. It goes to Secretary of State Blinken. It goes to Secretary of Defense Austin. It goes to the military leadership that has been absolutely god-awful and that has spent the last 8 months at least pushing critical race theory and has spent the last 10 years or longer, actually, since Obama started promoting within the ranks, trying to teach gender studies in Afghanistan, literally trying to teach gender studies as if that's not going to turn their population against us because it's not part of their culture. This is the single worst disgrace for the U.S. military and foreign policy establishment in history.
It's unforgivable to leave Americans in Afghanistan who want to come home. Also, that story Dan read, unforgivable if the Taliban offered us to keep Kabul until we got the Americans out. That's unforgivable. But did you see the story in Politico that sources said that we knew about the attack that was coming to the airport, where and when it would happen before those 13 U.S. service members were killed in that suicide bombing? And the Pentagon spokesman, John Kirby, yesterday, his only answer was, I'm not going to speak to a press story that was informed by the unlawful disclosure of classified information. So he basically admits that they knew what was going to happen and when and about where, but they didn't close that gate. I mean, how many unforgivable sins can they get away with?
I don't know. I mean, look, it was 2 weeks ago that I wrote a column, even then, saying that for what we knew already, Joe Biden should resign. This story and the story about saying the Taliban could take Kabul, even though they gave us the option not to, and just everything else, leaving Americans behind, he should resign, and so should the entire top ranks of his cabinet. This is I'm nearly apoplectic with anger, and so should every single American citizen.
Now, regarding, you know, the Biden lovers will say, well, this was all Trump's doing. He's the one who set up the deal with the Taliban. He had the initial deadline. But isn't that grasping for straws at this point, saying, you know, what would have happened if Trump were still president and still blaming it on him? I mean, I find it very, very hard to believe that any president, except for Joe Biden, would have withdrawn the way that this happened. Obama may have come up with a better way to get out of Afghanistan.
Obama would have come up with a better way to get to Afghanistan. But it is important to understand that blame can be shared. I'm so sick of the last 5 years of everybody saying everything is black and white, and if you blame one side a little bit, then you can't blame the other side at all. This is on Joe Biden's head, but everything Trump did there was wrong. It was Donald Trump who asked Pakistan to let out of prison the guy who is now going to be basically president of Afghanistan. It was Donald Trump who negotiated with the Taliban while not even letting the Afghan government be part of the negotiations. This is when the Afghan government was actually in control. It was Donald Trump who agreed to let 5,000 top Taliban fighters out of prison, the very ones that then went door to door, scaring people so badly that it made the Afghani army collapse. It was Donald Trump that set an absurdly early May 1st deadline, which at least Joe Biden, thank goodness, blew past. Donald Trump did almost everything wrong that he could do wrong. And so anybody that denies that is not being honest. But once you say that, you get to January 20th, and it is Joe Biden's baby. And Joe Biden has reversed almost everything else that Donald Trump
exactly.
did that was doable by executive action only. Why couldn't he have reversed what Trump did instead? Joe Biden made it 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times worse.
Unthinkably worse, for sure. Quinn, hang on. We're going to talk a little bit about your home city and the situation it is in right now, New Orleans, with Ida crossing nearly just over the city, but a little bit to the west of it, which is probably worse. We'll do that next, okay?
Okay.
It is 18 minutes after 8 o'clock.
Yeah, coming up, more Mobile Mornings on the way. Quinn Hillier stays with us. You're listening to FM Talk 106.5.
Morning from Dan Brennan, along with Dalton Orwig and Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. 8:23 Tuesdays means Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com and the Washington Examiner. And your hometown going through a time right now, Quinn, with Hurricane Ida, no power, no sewage. Have you talked with anybody over there? And what's your assessment of things right now?
Well, the obvious assessment is that this is sort of a nightmare. New Orleans, thank goodness, didn't get it as bad as Katrina did, but just west of us in LaPlace, and obviously almost all points south are just devastated, and meanwhile, it's not going to be fun living in New Orleans with no power. This thing was a monster. The good news was, for once, it looks like the human preparation and the human response has been competent. Not incompetent for once, but actually competent. I mean, there's only so much you can do to plan for and then respond to a storm like this. And everybody is pulling together and trying to do the right thing, and there haven't been any big gaps. But boy, I mean, I'm having trouble reaching people. I've gotten a few texts through, and the answers come back with like two-word texts like, "We're okay, thanks." So they're all really busy trying to put down, I don't know what the metaphor to use is, but they're up to their necks in alligators, mm-hmm. put it that way, yeah. and it's going to be a tough recovery.
Yeah, and the lack of cell signal and also impassable roads indicates it's very possible that death toll rises from two, which, two is pretty minimal. Of course, every life is terrible to lose a life. But after Katrina, you know, you kind of expect the worst when this major of a storm moves through. And it, like Dan said, in the exact worst place for New Orleans, just west of the city, and the east side being the worst of the storm. But it helps when you get $15 or $16 billion to, you know, revamp the levees around the city. And I guess this was the first real big test, and it seems like they held up pretty well.
Yep.
This was a test for those flood walls, the flood walls and the levees, and they held. Now, it is also true that this storm surge, as bad as the winds were, the storm surge was only about half of that of Katrina. Mm. So we still got to see what happens. I hope we never see what happens if another Katrina comes. But meanwhile, I'm telling you, I'm worried that Grand Isle and places like Golden Meadow, Houma, they're going to have years of recovery. Mm. And I don't know how people like that or people can live like that. I don't know how they can keep going back there and year after year putting up with these storms. My heart goes out to them. They're very hardy people.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Just a hardy bunch, and they're not going to give up their lifestyle or their where they live for anything else. It's just
bless
ingrained in them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you know, we're one to talk being here on the Gulf Coast. We've certainly seen our share of storms, but it feels like Louisiana has become a magnet for these massive storms. I mean, to have seven pass over the state last hurricane mm-hmm. season, and then one of the biggest storms we've seen in a long time to go where it did. I'm actually amazed that so far there hasn't been more of a loss of life attributed to the storm. And you know, New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell, she can at least to this point take this as a win for her. But through all the last couple of years, and with COVID-19, she has shut down so much around that city. I find it difficult to believe that the citizens of New Orleans have been happy with her as mayor, but yesterday, you know, she was able to kind of take that victory lap, and I guess well-deserved, because right now it seems like there's minimal loss of life.
It does seem like there's minimal loss of life, and I've got to say, Entergy, which somehow managed to let all the electricity go out, I mean, storms do that, their communications have been excellent. I've got a little place in New Orleans, and it's like six times a day I get these email updates, actually these text message updates from Entergy, at least letting us know what's going on. And part of that is done in conjunction with and in planning with civic officials. So again, everybody's handling it, as far as I can tell, about as well as you can handle it. But this is, I don't know, I'm just repeating myself saying your heart breaks. And I do hope that if they're refugees from over there, that people here in Mobile open their homes, their mm-hmm. back houses if they have them, you know, do whatever we can, just like we did after Katrina, to welcome anybody that needs to stay here.
Quinn, thanks for your time again today, and we'll all try to band together and help New Orleans in any way we can. We appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
That's Quinn Hillier. You can find his writings at quinnhillier.com, washingtonexaminer.com, and on Twitter at Quinn Hillier. When we get back, I want to tell you some places you can go to help those that have been affected by
Excellent.
The storm. Also, we got to go into this Afghanistan thing. Some audio from Joe Biden just last week saying he would not leave any Americans behind. And Dan Crenshaw, who was on Mobile Mornings last week with some, well, I want to call them beautiful words, but I'm not sure if that describes what he had to say yesterday about our withdrawal from Afghanistan.
830 FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings on a Tuesday. Hey, is that is that sunlight?
It is.
That's sunlight I see outside. That's some good news there as Ida moves out of the area. Hey, this segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And if you're like me, as you were preparing for the possibility, which for us it's a very real possibility, anytime there's a hurricane in the Gulf, you just have this feeling that it's going to turn directly towards Mobile and Baldwin mm-hmm. County. So I was preparing the yard, and the chances that that occurred, and I was thinking, I have a lot of stuff
that I'm, rid of.
That I'm moving right now that I do not need.
Yes.
Some would call it junk, and
yes.
I guess that's really what it is. But, you know, it's about to heat up again now that the storm's passed through. It's going to be hot. No one wants to get out there and do that work. So why don't you call 1-800-GOT-JUNK and have them come over and do that work for you. They make junk disappear. It's a very easy process to get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to come out to your home or business. You find a time that works for you. They find that window of time. You agree, and then they'll be out there in that window of time for that very convenient pickup. The price you get quoted is the price you'll pay. No surprise charges after the fact, and they dispose of the junk responsibly. So if you want to set up your appointment, I encourage you to give them a call today. 1-800-GOT-JUNK is the number, and the website is 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. 836 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings as we roll on. And, you know, Louisiana, we've been talking about it all morning. We did have some effects in our area with the tornado touchdown in Saraland, and you know, I don't think we got a clear answer or if anyone knows to this point, but was it the same tornado and on the same track that went from Saraland through Criolla? I know it was the same storm system, but I don't know if there were multiple touchdowns.
Yeah, I think there were two different ones because the warnings were coming in. I don't think we got a warning about Saraland. I don't. We may have, but I don't think what we were getting was this one up near Citronelle. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe 15 or 20 miles north of the one that hit Saraland. May have been like the same track of rain and storms, but I think it was two different ones.
And that same track moved north on 43 and even into Clark County, and I think there was some damage in Grove Hill and kind of that area up there. But thankfully, I haven't heard of any loss of life in Alabama. We did have that terrible highway, you know, wreck. The highway basically gave through west of Loosedale on Highway 26, and what a terrible, terrible accident there. They said 7 vehicles were involved, 2 people were killed, 10 injuries, and 3 of those injuries are life-threatening. So that's, of course, you know, devastating for those involved with that. But then in Louisiana, so far, there have been 2 deaths announced, but an untold number of destruction right now. One person, let's see, an AccuWeather expert, who, of course, deals with storms all the time, they said they believe Ida's damage, the total damage and economic loss, would fall between $70 and $80 billion. And so much of that, of course, happening on people's property. And people that don't have homes to go back to now that may have even, you know, stayed here in Mobile, mm-hmm. stayed out the storm here. So there are plenty of ways that you can give back. Of course, the American Red Cross is doing what they always do and taking donations. That's, of course, a charity you can trust. The Cajun Navy, I mean, they came on the scene. Was it a decade ago that we first heard of the Cajun Navy, or they've been around prior to that?
We learned about them with Katrina. Mm-hmm. I think that was when. And then Houston, they went out to Houston as well.
They were much needed in Houston. Well, the Cajun Navy has been out there, and I'm sure right now they're doing water rescues as we speak and helping people out. So you can help with the Cajun Navy. Also, of course, Salvation Army. Feed the Second Line is an actual – it's based in Louisiana, and they will use donations to help Hurricane Ida victims. Samaritan's Purse, the United Methodist Committee on Relief, United Way of Southeast Louisiana, Global Giving, just a number of organizations that are very dependable, and you can give there if you'd like to help with the victims of Ida.
And I would suspect that some churches and organizations here locally are going to form some opportunities for you to ride over there and give people what they need. There's going to be some centers of collection, I would think.
Yeah, with water and sewage being out for the next 4 or 5 days, you know, they're going to be looking for bottled water
yes.
and things of that nature.
Yes. Let's go back to Afghanistan, our conversation about Afghanistan. Will is on the line. Will is from Mobile. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Will, so what do you got for us?
Well, I've just been thinking about this, and now that we're supposedly out of Afghanistan and have left billions of high-tech military equipment, arms, munitions, aircraft, and given it to our enemy, mm-hmm. doesn't that call for us to arrest the president for treason and any of his accomplices for this? I mean, this is a treasonous act against America.
Right. Where is that line now? What is the line that you cross where treason starts getting thrown around, you know, because this has to be pretty damn close.
Well, I think we're past it. I mean, if you look at it, he has armed our enemies that chant death to America all the time, just left it there, didn't try to pull it out.
Yeah, like Dan Crenshaw said, you can call it a 20-year war. He said it's a never-ending war because of of the Taliban and more specifically ISIS. It's a never ending war because of their ideology, and their ideology is to kill us at every opportunity.
And we just enabled them to do that. Yep. They're wearing our uniforms and using our guns. So why aren't we arresting these people?
Well, we don't even have to wait for Russia to arm the Taliban now because we did a lot of that on our own. And I think the most damning video I saw from yesterday, the excuses started pouring out last week when it became known that we left so much equipment, so many weapons on the ground for the Taliban to just take and use. Remember, they started saying, well, they won't be able to use the American aircraft because they don't know how and they don't have the parts to use it. Well, yesterday, a Black Hawk helicopter being flown by, you would have to assume the Taliban, was circling above Kabul with a man hanging from the helicopter.
I saw that.
Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
They can always hire mercenaries to come in and repair and do whatever. I mean, if nothing else, they sell the stuff and get money for it.
Good call, Will.
Thank you, Will. Appreciate your call this morning.
Let's have him arrested.
And, you know, Russia and China already are basically saying, yeah, this is Taliban's government. They are acknowledging the Taliban is leading there, which they are. But, you know, Russia and China are just who knows how long or if they – I know they're not waiting long to get involved there. And it's just – I mean, no matter what aspect of the story you look at, the three things that we talked about this morning that to me are the most damning, obviously leaving Americans there that – not Americans that said – no, we're good. You guys go on home. We'll find our own way out. Or, you know, we like living in Afghanistan. These are Americans who the Secretary of State admitted wanted to get out of Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. And we left before the deadline. We left 24 hours before the deadline that was imposed by Joe Biden.
Right.
Just left those Americans there. I believe there's still contract workers that are Americans that are over there working. And I think they're the ones trying to get the Americans out now, but you know how dangerous that is. I mean, you've got these Afghan death squads going door to door. And then you have the story that was broken by Politico that said, we knew before that suicide bombing attack last week, we knew when it was going to happen. We knew about where it was going to happen.
Wasn't there something about the British where we kept the gate open for some British troops
to bring their people through,
either change their mind or just—I don't have all the facts there, but there was a reason that gate was still open later than it should have been.
So then the question is, was that trade-off worth it? You know, it's at what point do we start looking out for us and for our people? I mean, it's disgraceful that the British, the French, you had these other countries who were going out into Afghanistan to save their own people, and it just doesn't seem like the effort was there from our side, and it's pretty despicable. And you have to wonder what will they do about the Biden administration? How can you continue to let them govern the way they've been governing after this?
I don't know, and you know, I don't know what comes next if some action comes next that is very abrupt, or if we wait on some hearings about all this. You know, it saddens me for sure as the father of a young man who was in that country a good deal over the last 10 years and was serving at an elite level.
Mm-hmm.
So the things that he and his comrades were doing were definitely keeping us safe.
Yeah.
And suddenly we just hand it all over.
Right.
And there's no real strategy involved. You know, when you say the plan, Dan Crenshaw said it best. I said, what did you think about the plan, the withdrawal? And he said, I don't see a plan. And that's pretty much how we're outsiders trying to break this all down. You have people inside Washington. You have people who have been correspondents who have been following this story forever. You have military men. You've got people like Dan Crenshaw saying, if you don't see a plan, you're not alone. I don't see a plan. And that's completely shameful.
Yeah. When we get back, we've got to get to the phones. 343-0106. If you're on hold, please stay on hold. And I've got that audio from Dan Crenshaw after he joined us last week on Mobile Mornings. Yesterday, he had a lot more to say about our withdrawal from Afghanistan. You won't want to miss it.
845 FM Talk 106.5. Dan Brennan, Dalton Norwig. And the show is Mobile Mornings. We appreciate you listening. Morning from Dan and Dalton, 850. FM Talk 106.5.
Regarding IDA relief, how you can help here locally, Tony said they're taking donations at Bob's Downtown Diner. I think they're looking to get out pretty quick over to Louisiana. So You'll need to act quickly. He said taking donations for Ida Relief, toiletries, canned food, dog and cat food, water, shampoo, diapers and wipes. Just think the things you would need if you were left at home without power or water or sewage for any number of times. So they're taking that up at Bob's Downtown Diner. And also a text from Walt in Somerdale who said, town of Somerdale Town Hall, they're taking a load of supplies to Homa on Saturday. So you have this week. He said he has a semi-trailer to load. Drop-off points are, okay, multiple drop-off points. Town of Somerdale Town Hall, also Dr. Pishek Dental Office in Robertsdale, Middleton Auto Parts in Robertsdale, and Ingle Farms in Somerdale. He said, we'll also pick up items from anyone. So Walt doing great work there, and we appreciate that, Walt.
Yep. Get those. Get any kind of information about those drop-off points or these efforts that maybe your church or organization are putting together, let us know so we can make sure that they're more successful than they would be otherwise.
To the phone lines, and let's talk with, is it Dave in Foley? Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. Good morning. Can y'all confirm a rumor for me, please?
Okay.
I have heard that the Taliban is considering changing their name to the Tali-Biden.
Yeah. Tali-Biden. We knew Dave was going to come in with a one-liner.
Yep.
The Tali-Biden. Thank you, Dave.
That's, I mean, they gave him everything they wanted, right? More than they asked for, actually.
It's very depressing.
So, I was excited last week, even though it was a subdued interview, and, you know, it makes sense because of what we're going through right now as a country and what's happening with our American citizens and allies in Afghanistan and so many of our own who are here now who fought over there for so long to see it all, kind of go up in smoke as we withdraw from Afghanistan. Now, that's not to say that the fighting was done in vain. Certainly, we've talked about that and how much that means to us and the Afghans over there. But Dan Crenshaw was on with us last week. He was a Navy SEAL, and he had a lot to say on Mobile Mornings. Yesterday, there was, I think, some sort of congressional hearing, and they were each given, you know, time to speak. And he echoed basically what he said last week with us, that this even though Americans feel like we weren't necessarily fighting a war the entire 20 years. I've seen people argue that, well, most of that was occupation, and there weren't daily firefights happening all the time.
There weren't daily firefights in the news.
In the news.
There weren't, you know, I'm not saying daily, but there was enough activity going on over there that no one knows about or no one really has any details on because they're classified. These are special warriors doing special things, keeping us safe. Mm-hmm. And that happened all the time.
So while we, you know, didn't hear from Biden yesterday, Dan Crenshaw did speak, and this is what a real American had to say about our withdrawal efforts from Afghanistan.
It's worth noting we were not at war on September 10th, 2001. We weren't at war when the USS Cole was bombed in 2000. We weren't at war in 1998 when our embassies were bombed. We weren't at war in 1993 when the World Trade Center was bombed. But somebody was at war with us. We were just pretending like they weren't. And after September 11th, we stopped pretending. And unfortunately, today, we began pretending again. We began pretending like we ended a war. And I hope nobody's writing a headline that says, we ended America's longest war. We ended no wars. We didn't lose a war. We didn't end a war. But we did give up a strategic position in that war, in that fight. It will now be extremely difficult to deter or deny terrorist safe havens. We just can't do it. We don't have airfields nearby. We don't have the resources. Taliban will most likely close off cellular networks and internet, making it impossible to target. We don't have eyes and ears on the ground anymore. And the homeland is now at more risk than it has been in 20 years. And don't take my word for it. You can take the intel community's word for it. And I think what's more frustrating even is what Jim had alluded to. The intel community told this administration this would happen. Whether it was 2 days or 2 months or 6 months, they said, it will fall to the Taliban. So knowing this, why keep going with a terrible plan? Why keep going with a plan that has no evacuation plan, no plan for the equipment left behind? Why on earth would they do that? Because they love the slogan, no more endless wars. That's why. We made foreign policy based on an emotional slogan. And it has made America less safe, not more safe.
That's Dan Crenshaw yesterday.
We heard a lot of that on our show. He said the same thing. He said they based this whole thing on an emotional slogan. It feels good, Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the right thing to do? Well, it feels good.
Right.
So let's do it.
It's all about the polled slogans that they want to make sure sound right whenever they put it in front of people in the 2022 midterms.
Y'all stay safe out there.
And now don't be gaslighted into thinking that this was our only option, leaving almost and possibly more than 200 Americans on the ground that want to come back to America. And the Afghan allies that we made promises to. Let's time travel back to August 19th. The only sit-down interview that the president has had since this withdrawal began, the only time he's taken questions, when he even raised his voice at George Stephanopoulos, who almost more than anybody wants to help the administration, mm-hmm. right? So this is what Biden said less than 2 weeks ago about whether we would leave Americans stranded in Afghanistan.
All troops are supposed to be out by August 31st. Even if Americans and our Afghan allies are still trying to get out, they're going to leave.
We're going to do everything in our power to get all Americans out and our allies out.
Does that mean troops will stay beyond August 31st if necessary?
It depends on where we are and whether we can ramp these numbers up to 5,000 to 7,000 a day coming out. If that's the case, they'll all be out.
Because we've got like 10,000 to 15,000 Americans in the country right now, right? And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out is out?
Yes.
How about our Afghan allies? Does the commitment hold for them as well?
The commitment holds to get everyone out that, in fact, we can get out and everyone should come out. And that's the objective. That's what we're doing now. That's the path we're on. And I think we'll get there.
So Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And?
And if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay until we get them all out.
If there are American citizens left, we're going to stay until we get them all out. That was August 19th that Joe Biden said that. And now we have Americans left in Afghanistan who are depending on the Taliban to get out of the country. That's who their lives depend on right now.
Good luck. It's incredible. So those people, American citizens, and there's a couple hundred of them. I'm trying to find the number of Afghan allies who are also left behind.
I think thousands is what they said.
It's thousands. And evidently, they were completely expendable. In the end, to make sure that you met a date, those lives were expendable. And what those lives are going to become at this point under the Taliban, a guy hanging from a helicopter.
Our own helicopter.
Our own helicopter. There's the first image to give you an idea of how the Taliban is going to handle things going forward.
And even if we had just kept Bagram Air Force Base open and used that for evacuations, we might not even be discussing this right now.
Unreal. Who's Jeff got coming up?
Well, I know he's got Tommy Tuberville on the show today. That'll be in the second hour. You don't want to miss what the senator from Alabama has to say about all of this. Plus, Dan Gaynor will be on in the first hour. Former U.S. Attorney Jay Towne and the Federalist's Eddie Scarry on today's show.
859 FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. See you tomorrow.